And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm Duncan McKenzie.
And Duncan, you're...
Again. Why am I here again?
Yes, because Keller, I still think, is...
been deported. We don't know why.
Yes.
And yet he has still been sending emails.
Yes, and still blogging. So 140 characters.
You can blog from many. It's good.
Yes.
And you know what? We wanted to point out I'm wearing the same shirt I wore last week.
Yes.
Which was not intentional. I didn't know I was filming. Until after I already got dressed.
And, I'm wearing a special shirt. Ooh, look at this. That I'll be talking about as my pick of the week.
So the entire show, they're gonna be like, what is it? Did he get drafted?
Does he not know we can fast forward? So let's get right into our first story.
Or use the handy time code links.
Yes. Windows Store for developers submitting your Windows 8 applications.
Yes. So this is a cool article. It goes through all the steps. And what's the application process for creating a new app in the Windows Store portal is very wizard-like. They actually called it the Go Catch Your Bus feature, which is kind of funny. Is that at any point when you've gone through this really long, like 12-step process, you can stop. You can just walk away and go catch your bus. And then you come back and keep going. So that way, if you get to a part that's hard, and if you go through, it shows all the different parts. One of them I think would be tricky is you have to pick an age rating for your app.
Mm.
So let's say, theoretically,
what would Channel 9
think? That's what I'm saying, right? So I start thinking, what would we be? Would we be 3+? And then I think about some of your content.
Mature.
Well, there's a limit. You can't do adult only. So, you know, there's certain limits. So
there's nothing mature about it, the content on Channel
9. The Halloween.
It's very immature.
The Halloween things?
It's still immature.
Okay. So I don't know if we're 3+, though. We might be a different age.
We may be.
Anyways, the point being is that this article walks through the process. And what I think is kind of neat is they point out that you don't have to be done to do this. You're basically reserving your app, its name.
I do love the fact that you can reserve an app name before you have to go through. But I do think there will be a gold rush.
I'm calling Channel 9 Angry Birds.
Oh, yeah? With.
Yes. I have a nice logo picked out. It's like some sort of red bird thing. I picked it out myself.
Okay.
I think it's going to get a lot of downloads.
Okay. Good. Good. I'm going with Bookface. So we'll see.
Well done, sir.
We'll see what happens in terms of who gets the higher views. So, Windows 8 blog had an Internet Explorer performance lab and how they try and reliably measure web browser performance. So, some of the friends of the show, Jason Weber, who I love his detailed posts in terms of what it actually means. Mm-hmm. It's not just JavaScript, looking at the end-to-end cycle,
right.
What things they can do to cache.
Rendering, all sorts of things.
All rendering, yeah. Anything else you want to chime in here? Because these are just like ones you really have to go through in a lot of detail.
Yeah, it's just interesting that they do it by running against such a large number of sites and actually so that every build they have an idea of how is it rendering. I don't know if they give any particular examples, but Facebook or Bookface. And it's interesting because we usually hear about test sites, you know, the ACID test, things like that. And
sure.
It's cool that we're running against real code because real pages aren't usually built the same as benchmark. Tests. So I think this is great.
And different hardwares too. So they talk about some of the different laptops and so on. So, definitely some cool stuff there. Now the reduced pricing on SQL, Azure, and 100 megabyte database option.
There's two sides to this. One is that as you get into bigger and bigger amounts of data, they actually have a cap, at which point basically once you hit the 50 gig sort of level, after that point, your monthly price for your data is the same.
Yeah.
And so for large amounts of data, I know that a lot of people who are looking at putting an app into Azure, and they'll know that right now I have 30 gig, but we're planning that will double every year. And so it's very reassuring for them to basically be aware of the fact that that pricing is capped so that they don't have some sort of infinite growth to their pricing model.
So the two cool things that really stand out, and I'm going to try and do a picture-in-picture here. One is customers will realize 48 to 75% savings for databases larger than 1 gig. So what you see on the chart there, thanks, Greg, for putting this in, you see the total decrease by gigabyte size. So depending on where you are, you could you know end up with 75% savings. Now, another thing was the introduction of a 100 megabyte option, right? So what's interesting there is 100 megabytes, people say, what's that really for? That's for the small shop that isn't, you know, like their entire product inventory
right.
of Mountain Dew t-shirts and soda t-shirts.
I like that shop.
It is, you know, right. 4 megs with
so,
images.
So the other side to this is something that I'm not sure it's the best architecture in all cases, but I have seen situations where it works where every customer of a shop that is rolling out, let's say, facilities management software, like a manage a real estate property, that kind of stuff,
gets provisioned their own database.
They may actually want to do a database per customer, which if you're looking at, you know, $100 or something like that per month per database is not good, but the 100 meg size might be perfect. I mean, a single customer for a single at a single location, that might be.
Or if you're a reseller, awesome. Right? So I'm now offering my t-shirt e-commerce site as a service. So
I only have a few t-shirts,
and we're gonna keep beating this dead horse until. By the way, I love the dead horse. People think of me, what my mom thinks of me,
yeah,
and it's just pictures of dead horses.
There, posted that.
Yeah, I posted it beforehand.
Or Dare.
Yeah. Yeah,
he didn't give you any credit.
Probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
I'm sure someone posted it before you too.
I don't like the way you're looking at me. Okay, so how understanding assembly language helps debug .NET applications. So I think the key here is this is a code project article that talks about what's actually going on. When your application is actually running,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, I think it's interesting that when you do switch over to looking at stack traces and things like that, you have to be aware of the idea of, you know, I'm pushing things onto the stack and these are happening with the various calls, right? Like it's, I mean, if you're debugging through something like Visual Studios and Teletrace or something like that, then you don't need to be aware of this. I think the call stack is nicely abstracted for you. You can actually look at it at any point, see what's been pushed onto the stack. But it's different for me. I'm not sure how much it helps. I mean, I learned assembly language as well in school because I'm old. I guess that helps. I don't know. I think especially if you're looking at the deep, deep crash dumps, like mm-hmm. the kind of things that, you know,
well, I think IIS production produces, apps, yes. right, where you don't have a debugger is probably the classic example of, I have no idea why this thing is crashing. And they talk about some of the well-known ones like WinDBG and Son of Strike or SOS, as some people know it.
At the most, generally, in my case, when I get down to that point where all I have left is just a crash dump from an IIS box that's running in production, I just try to find out what specific part of the code crashed. I don't usually try to figure out why at that point. I try to nail it down to what, and then I go into a different type of debugging.
Sure.
Because at that point, I can't recreate the problem necessarily. So,
okay. Yep. All right. Well, there's Duncan's viewpoint. TFS attacher for Windows Phone 7. So I love this because it's actually using the OData service for a Team Foundation server.
And this was sent in by Brian Keller from Parts Unknown.
By the way, he pays us for every TFS ad that we give. So
he doesn't pay me.
He pays me for every TFS story. Okay. So I think that, you know, the obvious thing is you can take pictures and actually attach them in and get all your work items. So, hey, this is crashing. Now, the question is, what if you have a TFS project of a phone and you're trying to get a screenshot of the phone? It's all very circular.
Yeah. What I thought was cool about this is that it actually discusses the TFS OData service. And the idea in my mind of doing a Windows Phone 7 app that would let me, you know, submit bugs, read the status of a bug, look at it, make comments, all that kind of stuff is great. I'm terrible at saying I don't see the point of something. But I don't know when I'd attach an actual picture from my phone. But it depends on the type of app you're building, I suppose. Because the pictures on my phone are similar to the one in the slide. Slip back. Are pictures of kids playing soccer.
I see kids playing soccer,
and
yes.
Most of the time, although, honestly, the way some kids play soccer, maybe they do need a bug database.
I think that would be hilarious.
And you could just attach
active bugs, yeah, and it's like, okay, well.
Were you ever part of the Channel 9 redesign, the bug threads on that?
Yeah.
So we were working with a design agency and Nishant.
Maybe, yeah,
you know,
of course.
Nishant. People know Nishant.
We had him on when we were talking about the redesign.
So Nishant has a habit of attaching pictures of his dog to any conversation, which led to the design agency attaching pictures of their pets. And so these serious
Bambino.
Yes, these serious discussions about
you didn't
bug
have
issues.
A dog, and now no. You have a dog, and now you wish you could attach pictures of your dog.
Yeah, I was the grumpy guy who didn't. It was like, yeah. Why am I suddenly have, like, and seriously, 16 now, emails with photos in it.
Now you have more pictures of your dogs than your kid.
I have pictures of my dogs right,
see?
Right here. We can
see?
Look at it later.
See? Okay, next story. .NET Entity Framework 4.3 release. So Entity Framework, a bit of detail. Now, this is the release version. There are some notes in terms of things that you need to fix if you're doing beta that go beyond changing the files. Everything is on NuGet as well that you can download. They did remove the EDM metadata table. So, and there are a number of bug fixes, and those are things like Unicode, if you use a Unicode name, DB annotations, and so on. So, and then I think the biggest feature is the code first migration, and that's the idea where you can actually have a database built using code first, be incrementally changed as your code first model evolves. So I think we've talked about this before, but code first being there's Scott Guthrie goes through the three ways you can build a database, but
sure.
In the code first model, I'm actually doing the code first, then generate a model on that, and then how do I actually do changes? And they have a couple tutorials on where you want to control exactly how those changes. Mm-hmm. Are built, so I do some refactoring of my code, it actually changes the database model, or I want to do the automatic mode, and they talk through those examples. So definitely some stuff to look at. And in related news,
yes.
I think this is the other cool part.
It's got a pretty picture, and it's a graph, and I like it.
Yes. So
the red bars are smaller in most cases, and that's nice.
Yeah, so, you know, what's interesting is the EF raw SQL.
Yeah, I thought
compiled query, I don't
know. So let's back up for a second. So this is basically
what are we
going
looking at?
From, they're turning various abstractions, so Entity Framework, Link to SQL, things like that, into executing code and then the time it takes for that to run, going from .NET 4 to .NET 4.5, performance improvements. Mm-hmm. Now, I think their focus is on compiled queries because I would assume that's what most people do, and that's why they focus
okay.
on it. And if you look, the performance improvement on a move from like Entity Framework queries into the SQL and so on is enormous. I mean, we got the Entity SQL one is from 16, what's this, milliseconds probably, to 4 milliseconds. Hopefully not seconds. That'd be terrible.
It'd be pretty terrible.
But anyways, even if you just look relative numbers, some of these are enormous, 24 to 4. There is a small increase in executing just pure, create a string with raw SQL and just send that through, which at that point you're really just incurring overhead. Mm-hmm. And it is a pretty small difference, but yeah, it's sad. I mean, somebody's probably in trouble for making that a little slower.
Oh, really? Yeah. Let's focus on the good parts, which is faster, faster, faster.
Faster, yes.
Yeah, so definitely interesting stuff there. Now, friend of the show, Clemens. Is talking about Signal R by Service Bus. So a lot of people know Clemens as Mr. Service Bus and Signal R, which we've talked about before.
Yes. So Signal R, hot, cool topic these days.
Yes.
At least to me, I keep thinking about it all the time. Basically, just the idea of asynchronous, you know, real time back and forth communication between, it doesn't have to be between a web client, but basically between a client and a server. Signal R makes it easy. Kind of by wrapping and allowing you to sort of not have to be aware of, does my client support this? Does it support WebSockets? But in the back end, you can actually do lots of different things. So SignalR doesn't have a dependency on how you actually implement the communication in the back end. In fact, in last week's, we talked about an example, or we were looking at an example at least, that was using MSMQ. We didn't actually talk about that.
No, we didn't.
Anyways, there was an example where they used MSMQ in the back end, which is something that, you know, I haven't really used since, I think, Windows 2000.
Yeah, DNA days, baby.
Yeah, and so basically SignalR has nothing to do with that. In this example, we get to use the new hotness of Azure Service Bus to pass those messages around. And what's cool about the library that Clemens is discussing is that it actually cares about things like message order, which, in a chat application, maybe you could be a little iffy on that, a little less concerned. But if you're doing something more important, I don't know, auction sites, something like that, at that point it becomes very important that whoever actually clicked the button first that message is first in the queue to be processed. So it's very cool stuff, and it's just another example of making it easy to turn around and produce something that actually works.
Yeah, so SignalR, easy communication, then Service Bus has a number of those cool things for consistency, making sure that people read the message, mm-hmm. working well across firewalls and so on. So
and it's,
in the queues.
Yeah,
it's Azure. Cool. So definitely cool stuff. So Visual Studio Spell Checker extension using Roslyn. So I love Roslyn. And this is the idea of having the language service. So now I can actually build a Visual Studio extension to correct spelling errors. Mm-hmm.
So this is, it's funny is that when I see a spelling error in a variable is not so bad. So if you're running things like that, I mean, you fix it and boom, you can fix it throughout all your code and it's mm-hmm. fine. What I hate is when it's an actual class name. And so now you're, you know, changing a file, which depending on your source code control is like a delete and an add. And you're making a lot of changes to fix it, but yet I kind of have to. Mm-hmm. If you have, you know, we had one for a while around roles, and I think it was role like L-O-E-L or something. It was just a typo, but it was in the class name, therefore being called all over the place were extension methods and all sorts of things, all with the wrong.
Yeah.
And it bugs me a lot. And so, you know, I actually sat down to fix it one day, and I think I checked in like, you know, 20 files with changes sort of thing when it was done.
Refactor rename, baby.
To have this picked up at the beginning or
before
sooner where someone really, and then they stop using it because, you know, in this case, received. Actually, that's a common one. The I before E stuff gets
yeah, so, and if you look at this example, one of the things is, and I've actually done this, which was, when you think about variable names, you actually want to split based on differences in capitalization.
Right, it's smart. I mean, he's realizing that this is two words at this point.
Full variable name is really three words, and you're splitting on that capitalization. So if somebody does goof up on that part, then you're kind of hosed, but... Yep. Yeah, I actually did something similar when I was doing enums because you want a friendly name for an enum,
right.
And you can do a simple way to do it using annotations, mm-hmm. but those don't actually work across web services. So okay. Then I just did fun names and just did the split anytime there was a capital.
And did you make any spelling mistakes?
I did not, but maybe I don't know I did.
Right. Everyone else who has to actually now
extension.
Call your service? Hates you.
Basically.
Plus, there are children. There are small children out there who are using your service and also learning to spell a word incorrectly.
And the idea was this enum is now mapped into a UI, so it's actually showing up for end users too.
Ah. So you're taking actually enum values and like two stringing them?
Basically binding them.
Crazy.
Binding them based on the split value, right?
So that. And developers aren't necessarily good spellers.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a long weekend.
Cool.
Is what I'm saying. Okay, so going native Clang, defending C++ from Murphy's Million,
as I call it.
Murphy's Million Monkeys. So Chandler Carruth had a great session. This was another going native, sort of a must-see one where he talks about all the ways that people can get themselves in trouble with the C++. And it's common things, and, you know, this is sort of, I'd say, a recurring theme during going native, which
right.
is, look, this code looks normal. But
here's all the ways in which you've screwed yourself at this point.
In fact, you will find this code on this, this, and this site. Well, guess what? Look what this is really doing.
Right.
And is this what you really want to do?
It's a very sharp stick, C++.
Yes.
And
so,
people can poke themselves in the eye with it.
And the idea is Clang can help help make that an easier process. So
see,
definitely
you know
check out
I thought talk. The L was capitalized. When I was reading about this, when it first went up on Going Native, and I read about it then, I thought it was C, capital L.
Yeah, he really thought it was C.
So I thought it was C-Lang. And I didn't actually listen to it because I don't like web video. But I did read it, and I thought it was C-Lang all the way along.
Alrighty. Moving right along. Our good friend, Aryan Culp, talks about an article, Let Your Apps Sell Themselves. So the idea is you're a Windows Phone developer, you got a bunch of different apps, and you want to be able to cross-promote them,
yep.
right? So imagine I have three apps. I want to let me put a page, and I'll put those three apps on a page and be
you're
like more like me.
Yeah,
like, hey, if you like this app, you're going to love this one, right? But what happens when I now launch that fourth app? Well, all those three have that burned into their...
So now I have to push out a point update really just to help add more advertising?
Yeah, and then...
Add no value to the user at all?
Add no value, go through the process.
All that extra testing?
Yes.
Because you should really test
it. Yeah, so you can make this dynamic using things and use a little bit of link,
XML. It's
kind of
funky. It's kind of hacky. I don't mean in a bad way. But you know what I mean? He's grabbing...
It's the equivalent of an RSS feed of latest apps.
I understand, but he's parsing. It's not necessary...
It's coding for fun.
Yes. It's not a bad thing. It's just I'm not necessarily the intent of the thing was to be parsed and then displayed and have links right in your app, but it's cool.
Okay, so
I like it. It's neat. I think it's really cool. And
hater,
you know what?
Party of one.
Honestly, hater. I have seen many.
Your table's ready.
I have seen many, many apps that do cross promote. So if they can do this in a dynamic fashion, that's awesome.
Absolutely. Okay, so which brings us to one of my favorite tools, the free.NET decompiler. For everyone, forever. May the source be with you. So these are our friends at Telerik, who I love. This certainly seems like in response to, say, other decompilers.
Yeah, and going from
Reflector
free to not free. Well, we weren't going to say a particular one. But anyway, okay. Some of them were free before.
We talked about Reflector on the show. And yeah,
but so this one's cool. You do have to provide your personal information, which I was really surprised because you click the download and boom, it starts doing the install. And so I thought, wow, they don't require that because at a minimum, I mean, they are giving it away for free. I kind of expected they
registration where
it is. Once you get through the install, at some point, it asks you to sign into your Telerik account if you have one or enter your information. But then that's it. It's done. It's running. I actually was just running against some Channel 9 code. I was shocked at how accurate the code it produces was to what we actually wrote. It's not, I mean, you can tell it's not getting the source. It's flipped around a bit. Some of the if statements are not the way we wrote them. Some of the, you know, Lambda stuff is expanded a bit differently. But, yeah, it was really good. So, yeah, you should get it, especially if you want to look at DLLs from other people's stuff.
So that brings us to our picks of the week, and Duncan, you will start the pick of the week.
So back to the pet dog discussion here. This thing is crazy awesome. So there's the reference platform for the Robotics Studio, which I think Hanselman did something recently where he talked about it. It was Eddie that went around and took pictures. It's basically the, you know, wheels, laptop, camera, and this guy has done awesome stuff with it. I watched the video. There's a YouTube video, I think, lower down in the article. And it essentially is something he can control remotely, and he can play fetch with his dog.
Ah, it's adorable.
Now, what's interesting is that...
He's building a pet. He's building a companion
Pet. I mean, I think when we first saw a pet companion robot, we thought he built himself a pet.
Which is,
that's sad. But still, it's an idea. I mean, be popular in Japan. Right?
It's not sad.
Sad is
build yourself a girlfriend. I think build yourself.
Especially
you know,
out of
Ibo,
something
the,
like that,
the Sony
the
Ibo thing.
Ibos are cool. No,
yeah,
I get it.
It's not sad.
It's a little sad.
It's not sad.
Anyways, he actually has a cute little dog, and I don't mean that disparagingly, your little dog. But what I thought was interesting is, I mean, it's fascinating. He actually can control it. He can go pick up the ball, put it back into the little hopper, and fire it again. And the dog's just loving it, and he can do this from work with the remote control, and it's awesome. My dog would destroy this. He would. Like, you'd be playing with him, and you're talking, he can, you know, you're talking through it, like, oh, here you go, and then he'd start chewing on the arm, and you'd be like, stop! No, stop! And he wouldn't be listening because he knows you're not there.
Nice.
And it would be gone. The laptop, it would be terrible. 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 Anyways, I still think it's cool.
Good. Which brings us to my pick of the week, and that's the Ronald McDonald House Hockey Challenge. So,
and finally, we get to learn why you're wearing this shirt.
Yes, finally get to learn why I'm wearing this shirt. So definitely like them on Facebook, as you can see. Maybe they're Ronald McDonald. Let's get my perspective right. Ronald McDonald. Look at my finger there. Yeah, Ronald McDonald House Charity of Western Washington and Alaska. So the deal here is Microsoft for many years has done a hockey challenge. And this includes Amazon. Some folks remember Brian Valentine, who still works on the Amazon team now. And Mike and several Microsoft teams. So for the first time ever, we're going to have a dev team.
Brian Valentine is always goalie, right?
Yeah. Okay. He doesn't play anymore because he has bad knees, but he actually coached teams before. So I think
it's a big deal. Raises money for a really good cause.
16 teams or so, I think, this year. So So this is our official DevDiv jersey, which is
notice the A.
Ooh. Oh yeah.
And we all know what that stands for.
And names in the back. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. And this is our co-captain Arthur Yazinski actually took the Visual Studio logo, did this, and you know, folks from the top on down, Soma has given us a contribution as well to the DevDiv team. And
what happens if you lose? Do you get fired?
It's not about the money. It's actually about helping children. So for people that aren't familiar with Ronald McDonald House, it provides a place for families with sick children
to stay when the kid's in the hospital.
Exactly.
It's great. And
Seattle Children's Hospital.
It is sad though. You go to the website, which you should, and you should like it and share it with everyone and then read some of the stories and give money.
Yeah, so if you want to give money to our team, it's we'll put the link in the notes there, and it's for a great cause. And kudos to everyone participating.
I still think you're supposed to win.
Okay,
it's Microsoft. We want to win.
Well, the thing is, we're playing other Microsoft teams, and actually, for people who are really interested, there's a big rivalry between Windows and Exchange.
That is
the big rivalry game. We are playing against MSIT this year.
Okay.
So we'll see how we do.
Awesome. Well, good luck with that.
All right. Kudos. And thanks, everyone.